It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and I'm joined as always in our walk randomly through episodes of Magnum PI, the original, by David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Hi, guys.
Hang on. I got to walk through the scene in my white shoes. Just focus on the white shoes for like 10 minutes. That's all I ask.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
I have nothing else. It's a clue.
She seems to have that invisible touch. Right, are we doing Genesis songs? Is that what we're doing? This is Death in Texas, season 7, episode 6. It's your favorite good favorite bad Magnum writer, David. It's Bruce Turvey again.
Yeah. This is now, I mean, whenever I see Bruce Turvey's name come up on the screen, I you know, there are some episodes where I'm like, oh, I forgot he did that. That explains why I haven't rewatched this one. This is one that I remember explicitly, vividly at the time going, oh, this might be the one that was like, oh, he's really not good at this. Is how much I loved this episode.
We should also point out this is season 7 of Magnum, so this is when Magnum was declining in the ratings and about to go off the air.
Yes.
And Miami Vice was the big hit show, and clearly someone at CBS said, why can't you be more Miami Vice like?
Well,
that's
the
include
thing.
Pop songs and lurid murders
I don't know if it was the network, because this is the first episode that Selleck himself produced, which is odd. And I think it was just them saying, hey, let's try something new, or let's try to be this other show. But this is not the only Miami Vice.
We did an episode in our previous season where they did something like this. And I think I referred to it at the time as the midlife crisis of Magnum, where they're like, well, should we pick up the style of some of the hotter, newer shows? Is this how they make these shows now? And it seems so weird because even though they were contemporaneous a little bit, like, Miami Vice is not Magnum. Like, they are Magnum PI is from a tradition of CBS procedurals from the 70s, right? Whereas Miami Vice is a really different kind of beast. And I like Miami Vice, but Magnum PI is not. You got your chocolate in my peanut butter, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yes. I mean, Magnum is your traditional Universal Studios private eye.
Yeah.
Right? There is nothing reinventing the wheel. They just did it really well. They put nice little tropes and costumes and ticks on the characters, but you know, it's Rockford.
You get Lyme disease if you do that. Don't put ticks on your characters, people. Don't do it.
The episode you're thinking of, Jason, is the Frank Sinatra episode, Rollicking Good Time,
Laura,
involving child rape.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also beer commercial rock songs while we look for clues.
Yeah. Well, both of those episodes, the move that they picked up from Miami Vice, and again, it's sort of, you know, they're all professionals, but it is kind of ham-handed. It's like, well, I see what they're doing there. We could do that. We'll do a dialogue-less montage with a pop song behind it as our character investigates the seedy underbelly of society. And so in this episode, Mama by Genesis plays for like 3 minutes as Magnum investigates crimes, like Tubbs and Crockett investigate drugs. Magnum investigates murder, and he like is poking around. And the music is playing. It doesn't seem integrated with anything the show ever does, and that's what's weird about Miami Vice. It made more sense, and here it's just like, oh, well, okay.
Well, Miami Vice was originally Brandon Tartikoff slid a piece of paper across the table to Anthony Yerkovich that said
MTV Cops.
MTV Cops.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is. It worked for what they did. It was great. And in this, the only reason you would pick this song is for Phil Collins going, ha, every now and then, because it was kind of maniacal, like your killer. But, and I mean, I didn't know the song until I looked it up.
Also,
which is
Magnum is a, you know, Magnum is a noirish detective, but it's in Hawaii, and it's this version of noir detective that I like, which is it's the sunny noir, and it's seedy still, but it's well lit. Miami actually is convenient. It does the same thing as this for Honolulu, but the problem I have with it is that Magnum's Honolulu generally is brightly lit and chill and
It's paradise.
And safe, right?
Yeah.
And then in the Frank Sinatra episode and in this episode, it's like, oh no. And a couple others, but not very many. It's like, oh no, Honolulu at night, it's just hookers, okay?
Yeah.
That's all it is at night. So
hookers and sailors talking to hookers.
Sailors talking to hookers, hookers talking to sailors. That's it. And
It's like, I think the last time we saw that version of Honolulu in Magnum was like the third episode that Belisario wrote. Was it like Chinadol something like that?
It does not something they dwell on.
It doesn't work.
And it doesn't, it's certainly not what I think we think of as a Magnum PI thing where it's like super seedy Honolulu. It's not like it isn't a valid choice. It's just like Magnum leaned into, look, we're playing volleyball on the sand. We're paddling a canoe. We're at a lush estate. We're, you know, whatever. We're landing on a dirt strip somewhere in an airplane. Like, these are the Magnum things that happen. Not so much with the pimps and the hookers and the sailors in the seedy underbelly of Honolulu, which is
Waikiki Vice.
I'd like to introduce a quick segment that I like to call Phil shoehorns his weird baseball knowledge into a way that's only tangentially related to Magnum.
Well, I mean, we got so much great feedback about our previous episode, and maybe the season three of Magnum Podcast is the Phil's baseball season.
This is a backdoor pilot for just Phil talks about baseball randomly. When Babe Ruth first became Babe Ruth and is hitting massive home runs, Ty Cobb, who at the time was considered the best player of his day, was going, any idiot can hit home runs. And allegedly, there was a game where he told the press, "Watch me, I'm just gonna spend the game hitting home runs." And he hit like two or three out, and then he got tired of doing it and went back to it. I feel like this episode is Magnum PI looking at Miami Vice going, well, anyone can do that, except instead of hitting like three home runs in a game, they're tripping over their shoes and getting hit on the head with the baseball and running into the fence. So thus ends the segment. Phil tangentially relates something on Magnum PI to baseball.
So
I was going to say it could be Tales from Tales of Baseball.
It could be. So the CD Honolulu hookers and pimps and sailors, we should say, somebody is following one of the hookers. He has a team ring, one of Magnum's, you know, team ring. He's wearing one of those. He's got an Aloha shirt, and he's following her, and he has a knife. And there's a question of, like, first it's like, is it Magnum? And then it's like, well, if it's not Magnum, it's somebody that's kind of, are they impersonating Magnum? What's going on here?
Then you see his massive gut, and you go, it's not Magnum. It's Magnum, you have let yourself go.
No, it's Kenneth Tygar, who's been in a bazillion things over the years. He is a character actor who has worked in so many different things. You may know him from he's the Holocaust survivor who won't kneel to Loki in Marvel's The Avengers. Maybe that's where you know him from, or 10,000 other things he was in.
I mean, he plays lots of lawyers, judges, doctors. He occasionally plays Nazis.
Character
actor. He occasionally plays Jews.
Yeah.
And I first knew him. I think I first saw him in the late 70s on Barney Miller as a recurring character who at one point he comes in convinced he's a werewolf, which is hilarious. I think it's just called werewolf. He comes back thinking he's Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he plays several other characters because they reused actors all the time. Because of Barney Miller, he became one of those, it's that guy.
Yeah, he's a real it's that guy. But yes, he's also not a Tom Selleck double by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Anyway, the plot of this episode is Higgins is going to Maui. It is the 4th of July weekend, and we know that it's the anniversary of Magnum's dad's death, and he paddles around, and we've seen that in other episodes. Happy summer, everybody. It's the summer of Magnum here. This is our summer connection. And also, by the way, Magnum is being audited. So there's a tax audit going on.
Wow, that sounds really important to the plot.
Yeah, it's really.
Well, it's half the title.
Again and again.
That's right.
It's half the title.
Right. So
that's
not
the
yet
more
seen
interesting
any death,
part.
But the taxes are here. I'm sure it's mostly going to be about the taxes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably so.
At least 50-50.
All right. So there's a phone call Magnum gets, and it is Kenneth Tygar, and he says, rub-a-dub-dub, three men in a tub, and who do you think they be? And he's like, prank, phone call.
As would anyone.
Yes.
As would you or I if someone came, hello!
But he calls back.
I think your auto warranty is about to expire.
That's right.
Oh, no. pal.
But he calls back and he says, who is this? He says, well, they haven't given me a name yet, but you tried to kill Philippe and he killed Laboul, characters from the pilot episode of Magnum P.I. that you might have seen.
We've never mentioned after the pilot.
But now you're going to dip your hands in the blood of a whore and three men at a time. Goodbye. And he's out of there.
Because you remember that nursery rhyme about dipping your hands in the blood of a whore.
Yeah, I mean, sure. it was
Grimm Brothers?
It's kind of on the outside of the canon, okay, because of, for reasons. But yes, so, but because Magnum Posca is like, he knows stuff about me. Friends, last week we talked about an episode where a kid wanted to be like Magnum and had clippings of Magnum. This is an episode where a crazy killer wants to be like Magnum and has clippings of Magnum and is, in this case, I believe he may also have a Magnum. This may be, Kenneth Tygar's character may actually be the proprietor of Magnum-Mania.com. I'm just saying, it's possible.
Wow.
It's possible.
Wow.
He may have a podcast.
Tying into your conspiracy, the first note on the episode in Magnumania.com, this is the first episode to be produced by Tom Selleck, and what a great one it is!
Their podcast begins, Rub-a-dub-dub, Magnum in a tub, welcome to my podcast! Who do you think I be? They haven't christened me yet.
And so yeah, he's got the clippings, he's got the fandom, but he's also got the costume, and when we first see him, we're supposed to think it's Magnum.
Right, because he's got the ring and the
Bruce, what are you doing?
This is the dark version of Summer School. This is the dark version.
It really is.
Of Summer School. So he goes to Page. So we get to see Joe Santos as Lieutenant Page.
That's his first episode.
I was going to say.
And he basically says, Magnum, what can I do? You got a call, whatever. And then he calls later and he's like, oh, blood of a whore. Yep. Well, check.
He has this one really weird line where he sends Magnum away. But he's just got this really weird line reading of, yeah, stick by the phone, dude.
Yep. Well, that was his, because he's in Hawaii. He's a surfing detective. Page, the Lieutenant Page.
Also wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a Magnum fan, too.
It turns out that the blood of a whore was found, indeed, right in front of a bakery that's also a butcher next to a candle shop. Oh, snap.
Oh,
damn.
No. The prophecy has come true.
Because this is the dark version of Summer School. Oh, yeah.
Chicka-chicka. Wouldn't
it be, oh, no?
Yeah, that's right. Chicka-chicka. Oh, no.
version of that song.
That has been our segment, not using enough of the song to pay royalties to Yellow.
So, what Joe Santos says is, you have the reputation, Magnum, of being a guy who does things on his own. Stick by the phone on this one, dude. But a reporter breaks in.
Into the estate,
and this is one of those red herrings. Although the true red herring in this episode is the tax audit, Bruce Turvey. But the reporter breaks in, and Magnum catches him, and the guy calls again. He leaves more riddles. It's definitely, this guy is an avid viewer of Magnum PI. He's a fan. He's a Magnum fan. There's a Genesis song because they love the Phil Collins. Got to have a Genesis song. Just a little bit now. There'll be the whole song later, but there's a little bit of Phil Collins right in here. And then comes the moment. Magnum, do you remember? Do you remember when you killed Robert Loggia in the Honolulu Airport bathroom in the pilot episode of Magnum P.I.?
Robert Loggia.
Gasp. Oh, it's all coming together. He saw the pilot episode.
I loved that bathroom, Magnum, and you ruined it. Now let me tell you about the ugliest dog in all of Hawaii, Magnum. Do you remember the name Algernon Farnsworth? Have you seen the sunrise at the Pali Lookout at any point?
See, they don't mention this is the thing. They don't mention the episode that everyone remembers.
Yeah.
They're mentioning, like, deep cuts of Mac.
It's deep cuts, and then also that thing where he saved a dog, where they filmed that special for this episode and put it in. It's the clip show plus the dog clip.
And speaking of Bruce Turvey...
Remember Luther Gillis Magnum? He's a popular recurring character.
Speaking of Bruce Chervy as Super Magnum fanboy, this is the second episode where he talks about, oh, and I keep having those missing cat cases. I can't remember which episode he says it in twice.
Magnum,
he emphasizes it.
Magnum, do you remember to eat the snow in Hawaii? Because you shouldn't. Don't do it.
That's the same episode with Robert Loggia. Yeah. I'm repeating myself now.
I've only watched three episodes.
So Magnum is supposed to be waiting by the phone, but what he does is he tips the pizza boy $100 to steal his truck, goes to the phone booth that he's identified from the clues as where he's going to be, and again, riddle me this, Magnum. No. Actually says, riddle me this.
Actually says that. Bear in mind, this is the same guy who's trying to Welsh on his $13 and $39 poker games.
Right. Oh, man.
But he has $100.
The letters we're going to get from people in Wales now about that. So, you know, I apologize for David's racism toward the Welsh. This brings us to, strangely, in the middle of this episode, but you know what? It's season three of Magnum Podcast. Anything can happen. It brings us to our letter segment. I'd like to read a letter from...
It's the crazy round.
From a listener. It's a Blair from Florida. Blair writes... Mm-hmm. Jason, Philip, and David, I discovered Magnum at the beginning of the pandemic while flipping through channels in a motel room. I caught the final 5 minutes of Old Acquaintance, where Magnum pulls a bomb off a dolphin just as it explodes next to a boat full of tourists, and I was hooked.
Now I'm beginning to envision that Blair is the serial killer. Yeah,
well, that's right.
Remember when you pulled a bomb off a dolphin?
Yes.
Is that some kind of euphemism?
I got the complete series on DVD and have been making my way through the show, all the while listening to your commentary after each one. Being 26 years old... None of my friends watch Magnum, and my dad is a Rockford guy. We have a bitter feud. Fascinating aside there.
Come on. Wow. Rockford. No,
how can you not like both?
They go well together. They go well together.
Yeah.
You and your dad should bury the hatchet.
The cowboys and the farmers can be friends, as can the Magnum and the Rockford fans.
So it's great to be able to listen to your conversations about my favorite show. I just watched the season 7 episode Death and Taxes last night. And was struck with a revelation. The new Batman movie, The Batman, is a complete ripoff of this Magnum episode. Now, I know what you're thinking. Coincidences happen all the time. When there are two detective stories, there are going to be similarities. But when I explain it, you'll have no choice but to accept the truth. Both the Batman...
Before you go any further...
Okay, all right.
Points for I Know What You're Thinking.
Now,
very
I know what you're
good.
Thinking, yes.
Very good.
No, that's great.
Both the Batman and the Magnum episode follow serial killers who leave rhyming riddles addressed to the heroes. In both cases, the riddles are little nursery rhymes trying to get the hero about the location target of the next victim. Both killers murder targeted suspects that they think are ruining the city. But when both the Batman and Magnum enter the killer's place of residence, there are newspaper clippings of our hero everywhere, showing the killer is obsessed with them. When the Riddler, Batman, and the Ripper, Magnum, are caught, they both think that the hero will be proud of them. They both say that now they can team up and clean up the city. When Magnum and the Batman tell them that they have it all wrong, both killers freak out and start to cry, screaming, "This was not how it was supposed to go." The only difference is that Batman captures the Riddler and that Magnum, in typical Magnum fashion, shoots and kills the Ripper. Anyway, that's my theory. Keep an eye out for more Magnum ripoffs in Big Hollywood and keep up the podcast. Blair from Florida. Blair, you are the reason we did this episode. And
God, son of a...
Blair's not wrong.
Yeah.
No,
he's not wrong.
But
I just saw the Batman. They are. But yes, these are tropes that go back further.
Dozens of things. Yeah.
Because the Batman, which is a movie that I actually kind of liked, it is what made me like it is I realized they were going for a David Fincher kind of Zodiac tone, gritty and dirty and smelly and all of that. But they also wanted to have it be kind of a detective story. And although there are several moments in the Batman that are ludicrous, it is. Trying to be a detective story. As a result, it is, and they want the Riddler in it, it becomes not just a detective story, but a story in which a detective is solving dumb riddles. And if you haven't seen The Batman, I'll just tell you, one of the things I really like about The Batman is that one of the Riddler's riddles is so nonsensical that they keep trying to understand it and misunderstand it throughout the entire movie. At various points, they're like, oh, it means you. Oh, no, it means me. Oh, it means something totally different. And I love that because nothing is more true to life about a riddle, a clever riddle, than that it's actually really bad and nobody gets it. So
what
good
I really
job,
love
Batman.
About the 1966 Batman when the Riddler was on,
uh-huh.
is they would have these riddles and Batman would solve it instantly and it would be a stupid thing
yes.
that only Batman would
right.
understand. Why, of course, the Gotham Bank. And then
yes.
you'd be all, no,
what?
What?
Holy and impossible
it,
riddle, Batman.
Yeah.
How did you know?
No, it's
Batman.
Very simple.
Here on
very
Magnum
simple, Robin.
PI, they're taking it seriously that Magnum is going to instantly know the only neon sign in Hawaii with a flashing B, and that we the viewer are supposed to go, oh yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
Why? Of course, chum. I meant to answer a phone at Half Moon Beach.
So, anyway, thank you, Blair. I guess
I'd like to introduce my sub segment that I call Phil Curses the Readers.
Okay.
Or listeners, and I'd like to address it to Blair.
Yeah, okay.
Blair, it was a great letter. It was a great point. You're clearly a clever man, and kudos to you. You son of a bitch for making us watch this episode. Blair, I have suggested so many bad episodes that we watch on this podcast, and I end up feeling like a donkey when these two guys are watching it and going, oh, this wasn't very good. We've wasted our lives. Thanks, Phil. And now you've done that, Blair. Now you're the thanks, Phil, and I hope it feels good. I hope it feels good, Blair.
Thanks,
anyhow,
Blair.
Keep the letters coming.
All right, the next 2 minutes of this podcast will just be a Genesis song. And,
we love our listeners.
Yes.
We as Genesis plays, a dead body is found in a dumpster in that same alley. Magnum realizes that the body was there all along because of the guy on the phone.
Not just any Genesis song, but the same Genesis song.
Yeah.
Mama. It's not like they're digging back into the back catalog and it's Peter Gabriel singing.
No.
They only had enough money for one.
So yeah. I guess fortunately it's not Trash Day or they would have taken the body away, but the body's there. Magnum sees a hotel window it might have been seen from, and then he goes
now,
over to the hotel.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, hold on. This is the one thing I like in the episode.
Oh, all right.
It is
the dead body in the dumpster. You like
flourish.
That? Okay.
I was kind of okay with that. No. This is the one directorial flourish that kind of works, right? So he's thinking back, you know, I watched you the whole time, Magnum.
Yes.
Right? And so he's found the body. He's looking around. We're listening to the music. Now, and this is a bad thing, you have this long montage of music with no narration in a show that for 6.5 seasons has had narration over every music scene, right? It's like, that's weird.
I know what you're thinking. Can you turn down the radio, please? I know it's Genesis, but please turn it down, because I know what you're thinking.
I know what you're thinking, but I love Phil Collins. But he is looking around. He's thinking. We don't always get to see characters think. And he looks up at the window, and he sees the window, and then the camera kind of does this sort of jumping zoom towards the window until it's, you know, focused right at the window, looking through the door, and the door opens, and there's Maggie.
Yeah, there's a dissolve.
That is a nice dissolve.
There's a dissolve to the more clear shot of the back of the door, and then the door opens, and it's Magnum, and he walks in to the seedy hotel room set. It's in a half a dozen at least episodes of Magnum PI. Whenever you need a seedy hotel room.
More.
This is it. Yeah, maybe dozens of episodes of Magnum. There are only two kinds of hotels in Hawaii, right? There is the, of course, Waikiki High-Rise Hotel, who is our former sponsor.
Big High-Rise Hotel.
Former sponsor, Big High-Rise Hotel. Luxurious.
Oh, not former sponsor, current.
Oh.
When in Hawaii, stay at Big High-Rise
Hotel. I'm glad
hotel.
We got them back.
You'll be murdered there.
Big High-Rise Hotel.
You won't see hookers stuffed into dumpsters.
No, this is the sunny part
that
of Waikiki.
Extra.
Stay off the balcony, though, because somebody might shoot at you or you might have to climb up or down. But otherwise, Big High-Rise Hotel is really great. Great to have a meeting. You could be a mobster. It could be a consultant. It could be anybody down in the spacious lobby. But the seedy hotel room is the other hotel that's in Hawaii, and we get it here. It's in many, 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 many other episodes as well. I love that it's just the one. They just keep reusing it. It's great. Also,
one of the few times Magnum isn't beaten up in that hotel room,
I think that hotel room was in several episodes of Hawaii Five-0.
Probably.
Honestly.
This hotel room in this episode is also an evidence dungeon. Because it has all of the clippings that the Ripper, or whatever his name will be, has about Magnum. Again, the Magnum scrapbook is here. He realizes that the reporter is the next victim, although Paige doesn't care. However, the clipping about a swimming competition leads Magnum to realize the real solution to the riddle is a swimming competition he participated in several years ago based on how many heats were in
the
morning
the riddle
and the
is
afternoon.
The classic,
yes.
The classic riddle of, you know, what is four legs in the morning, two legs in the afternoon, and three legs at night. Which, okay, a man. I mean, literally, I remember in 1980, whatever, going, a man.
A man, right.
And then
but the trick is,
Magnum is like, huh?
It's also the swimming competition he was in where he had to fill in and swim in the evening and all of that. And so
and
we go to another
and laps and heats
another
and
set we've been to before, the swimming stadium. The reporter is there. Yeah. The Ripper has him. Magnum flips on the lights. We get that moment as described by Blair from Florida where Magnum says
Bat-Magnum
to the the Riddler, the Ripper, I don't know you. This is a moment that I really liked where finally we meet the killer and he goes, "It's me. Are you surprised?" And Magnum's like, "It's a me." Yeah, that's right.
Wrong
episode. He says, "I don't know you." I love that. And then Magnum has a strategy here, which I really like, which is I'm going to demean the man who is, and I'm going to try to he's trying to lure him toward Magnum because Magnum can shoot him and away from the reporter who's been tied up. And so he calls him a nobody. And then we get to our big climax, which is he says, "Aha, Magnum, but I've outriddled you. I've outwitted you. You can't win. If you don't shoot me, I win. And if you do shoot me, I win." And Magnum's like, "Yeah, I'm just gonna shoot you."
He's like, "Yeah, okay, okay. So, I'm not. The only way to win is not to play."
So even though he's a Magnum super fan, he didn't watch through the parts about all the people Magnum has shot over the years.
They never did a story about Ivan.
It is
no.
Like in summer school, he killed those two hitmen, like two of the finest hitmen on Oahu, or murdered by Magnum. Well, I mean, self-defense, fine, but killed by Magnum. and only Ivan was a murderer. So I think it's just very weird that, and again, it's nonsense, right? The script is nonsense. He's like, "Oh, I win either way." I think what his point is you won't know why I know so much about you, but like I found the scrapbook. Like they find out later that he was a client and he had one meeting. And
he was a client that he forgot all about. Case, and he felt that Magnum had done him a favor. But it still doesn't really explain why he snapped.
I guess he won. We'll never understand this script.
Yes.
Thing I really never understood was, why does he know about and have the ring? Where did he get the ring? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's literally just to screw with the audience in the first scene.
It's the Bruce Servi playbook where it's someone comes in and goes, "How would he win? Because it's unanswerable, okay?"
Yeah, I should mention.
And I was amused that, you know, they kept, every time they would cut to Tiger, you know, calling on the phone and doing his whole, you know, "There was an old lady from Nantucket" and all
right.
that. Mm-hmm. They kept
mimicking. "How many fingers am I holding up, Magnum?"
Well, and this is the thing that killed me, is they kept mimicking that scene that was in a lot of the opening credits through the early seasons of the show, where it's, you know, Selleck on the phone, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, showing off the ring, which is a scene from the pilot. And they kept mimicking that. And it's like, this is maybe the story trope I hate the most is the taunting sing-song killer and the repetitive thing. But just repeating that shot because we don't want to show the guy. Why can't we see the guy?
We know it's not Magnum.
We know it's not Magnum.
And it's not anybody we have seen before. There's no revelation here.
Yeah.
At all. I did wonder.
He has a very expressive mouth.
Yeah.
You know.
In fact, what I would say is, and maybe this was a version of the script. I did it again with a Bruce Servi script. I'm going to say maybe there was another version of this script, because the other way to do this is to have him be a mystery and have him have the team ring and have him know about Philippe and Laboule and have it be like a real mystery of like Magnum is uneasy. Like, who was this guy and is this related? We know the show has done all sorts of like his Magnum's thing in naval intelligence, right? So it could be like, oh, maybe there is a conspiracy here and this guy knows too much. And he says something as he's dying that makes Magnum be like, oh, I have to rethink everything. But no, he's just some moke who got a lot of clippings and found a team ring, or maybe like got went on Etsy and got somebody to make him a team ring. I don't know. And so it's just, it's kind of pointless. But he wins, I guess, because we're talking about him now. And what he does is he tries to go to kill the reporter, and Magnum is forced to shoot him, and he does. And I thought in that moment, what you want to do is kick the reporter into the water, because he's tied up.
Yeah.
And then the reporter's going to be drowning, and then you run away from
he's
Magnum.
He's struggling and drowning, and you run away from Magnum, and Magnum has to decide, do I save the reporter, or do I get the guy?
Which is more like, I know that's more like the Joker in the Dark Knight than it is like the Riddler.
It's the Dark Knight as opposed to the Riddler. Yeah.
But if the guy gets away, this reporter from a crappy paper somewhere is one of the boats, and I guess I'm the other boat.
Number two, I guess. I didn't think this through, Magnum.
But just imagine, you know, if the guy gets away, you get a whole second episode out of that,
right?
And you can play with the Philippe and the Bull thing, and that's way more interesting than what Bruce came up with.
So David mentioned his least favorite trope. My least favorite trope is and my wife calls this the seven habits of highly effective serial
killers. Ah, yes.
Where they just have these time management and intricate plotting things that, oh, Magnum, I know every maneuver, and it's just, it's really stupid. It's stupid things about the most uninteresting kind of killers in the world, when really they're just sickos.
And you know, if you did a Zucker Abrams Zucker version of this, it wouldn't just be that Magnum finds the scrapbook. He'd also find the planner with all the time blocked off to do the plotting, and here's where I call. Oh, his call is scheduled. Well, look at that.
A little
and to do it over the 4th of July, and to tie it into the Home from the Sea episode, which is the greatest Magnum PI episode. Mm-hmm. It just oh my God! Talk about your stolen valor.
He's a fanboy. To mention that and not have a clip from it, when you show him chasing the ugliest dog in Hawaii. Come on.
So I didn't even mention, the tax storyline goes nowhere other than we see Maggie Poole a couple of times, who is there to help Magnum with his taxes. So,
because she's apparently an accountant in addition to being in naval intelligence.
Uh-huh, yeah.
She's just doing it for the free
dinners. But that's totally random and has nothing to do with it. The guy dies saying a wise old owl lived in an oak, whatever. He talks to the reporter. The reporter is like, you saved my life, anything. And Magnum's like, just don't mention my name. Cut to Magnum's name in the headline in the newspaper. I love that.
But it wasn't the same reporter.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Was it?
Yeah. That's his newspaper.
I missed
that. Yeah.
He used the story to get out of the crappy supermarket supplement to become like a reporter for the Hawaii Daily or whatever the hell newspaper was. Yeah.
I do have in my notes Boy Kolchak.
Yeah,
because he does kind of talk about tabloid stuff.
So he basically looks like a Will Ferrell character and acts like a Will Ferrell character for much of the movie. Or much of the episode.
So,
not a movie.
You're right, though,
oh, God,
about Home from the Sea, because the end is basically, oh, well, now Magnum's going to be serious because it's the 4th of July and my dad died and I'm paddling out and remember my taxes. Well, I don't know. Never mind. Anyway,
how'd the tax thing go, Magnum? I don't remember.
I don't really know. We're not going to talk about that.
We dropped that by the first commercial break.
I mean,
Come on. This
is a show where countless people die in countless episodes, so death isn't really that special. Taxes is the only thing that's special.
Yeah.
Could
Where
we
are
really
our taxes?
Not think of a title for the plot?
I actually would be interested to see a montage of Magnum and Maggie working on his taxes while Genesis plays.
And the whole reason...
that the audit goes terribly because Magnum is distracted by the fact that he's chasing a serial killer.
I mean, you could have actually done a fun clip show mystery thing involving a tax audit because the whole point of the tax audit was to match up receipts to previous cases.
Oh, David, see, again, I will say to you, makes me feel like maybe that was a pitch and it just ended up sinking beneath the sea in the final version of this, right? Because this episode is strangely clip show-ish, except not. And the taxes thing would have been a great way into saying like, no, I used that to do this. And you use a clip or you record some new clips and it would be kind of a funny thing. It doesn't make sense here at all.
Nope.
And I was going to say on a more serious point about the idea of the riddle me this kind of plot. is like a good mystery is a puzzle to be solved. And yes. I would argue that the laziest way to do it is to just have a character do puzzles, right? Like,
yeah,
the character does the puzzles. It was like, well, I mean, really, the writer should do the puzzles, not a character.
PI, I gave you all the clues.
I gave you all the clues.
Because you can't, there's no snow to write in.
I literally gave you all the clues.
Don't write in the snow in Hawaii.
Just don't. No. Don't do it.
Also, all of our friends are gone in this episode.
Yes.
Yep.
Higgins goes away. TC and Rick go away. We don't even get the Ferrari, for God's sake. It's replaced with a pizza van.
And you got to think, the three of them were like, this is the first episode you produced, Tom. What the hell?
Is there a meaty role in here for Hillerman? No.
Does Minetti get crashed over the head with a bottle? No.
What I was going to say is that it's also, like, again, if it's Home by the Sea, Home from the Sea, right? So it's the contemplative Magnum and his dad and all of that, right? And so he likes to be alone. And so I think what they're going for here is, aha, but this time he's alone and he's suddenly caught up in a crazy serial killer case. But it's like, that's a bad mixture. Like, that's a mistake.
It's cheapening the idea of home from the sea.
Yeah.
It does, yes.
That is one of the things that actually made me angry in 19 whatever. Because, yeah, that is such a great episode. And this, you know, like, early on in the episode when they're all like, we know why you want to be alone, Thomas. And he says, well, it's not just that. Good luck with your, don't jinx it. And then he keeps trying to say tax audit, and he can't do it. It's like Fonzie trying to say liver. And, you know, like, and finally everybody leaves and he goes, tax audit.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because Selleck is good at that. But again, it, like, that's the thing he's afraid of. No, we'll give him a serial killer to be afraid of. There's not even any and in this. Anyway.
I mean, there's a lot of and. I think that the killer is bringing a lot of and to it. And Magnum, I've got more clues for you. He's the and. He's the end. Go to the King Kamehameha Club and order a drink. And the number of the cost of the drink, we'll divide that by the day. If you consider Sunday to be one, I'll just come to the beach, Magnum.
Did I tell you I'm a very good accountant, Magnum?
That's right.
I could help you.
If you kill me,
that's your story.
If you kill me, I will never do your taxes.
If you kill me, the tax man wins.
So thank you, Blair from Florida. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks, pal.
Mm. Oh, and another thing that bothered me watching it this time, because I was watching it in with earbuds in, and it's not quite to the level of the traditional bad ADR, but late in the episode where he's talking with Paige in his office, and it keeps cutting back to Paige. There is way too much chatter on in the office at Paige's end of the call. It's like, will you shut up? Because you can't even make out what he's saying very well. It's like, what were you thinking? I know. I should be having fun. This episode pisses me off.
I'm okay. I think it's okay. I would actually say it's kind of good bad, but it is bad. It is a bad episode. But
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I kind of enjoy
it's a very bad
how bad it is. Also, I said Home by the Sea instead of Home from the Sea. Home by the Sea is a song on the album Genesis by Genesis that also includes Mama.
Oh?
I think I was just thinking of Genesis.
It's Tales from Home from or Home by the Sea.
Second Home by the Sea. It's no fun being an illegal alien. You know, again, yada, yada, yada. There's Genesis, Phil Collins. All right. That brings us to the end of this episode of Magnum Podcast, our season 3. It's just going great. A lot of new segments, a lot of letters from listeners. Magnum@theincomparable.com if you want to send us some letters. Don't be like Blair.
Really be encouraged to send that after we spent the entire episode cursing Bill Blair. Send in those letters. Maybe we'll scream at you for 20 minutes.
If you're lucky.
Thanks, listener.
More like death and taxing my patience.
I have just one word to say after all that. Sussudio.